attacked by the federal government.
Pilot says members of the Native community are standing with their allies and took part in demonstrations against ICE on Wednesday in the area of the shooting.
There was a woman Native singer group that sang, and it's all about the healing. And I think the community, especially that community, really knows that the Native community is really involved and really embedded into everything that happens there, happens to them. And it was only a very short blocks away from the murder of George Floyd, and that community is so scarred, but we have a resilience, and our Native community is there and was there and is there and will still be there. We also are a big part of the community, and we want people to be safe, but we also want to be heard and be out there and support our community too, because this is our community too, and all of Turtle Island is our community.
The woman killed was identified as 37-year-old Renee Good. The Trump administration is justifying the shooting, while the city's mayor disputes that and is demanding ICE leave Minneapolis. On Wednesday, a three-judge panel in Phoenix, Arizona, heard arguments over continuing a court-ordered injunction blocking a controversial land exchange. As KJZ's Gabriel Pietrazio reports, the land swap would result in a copper mining operation that's estimated to create a two-mile-wide crater, devouring an Apache holy site.
It's been 140 days since the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals delayed a land swap first approved by Congress more than a decade ago. According to the 2015 law, 2,400 acres of Tonto National Forest must be turned over to Resolution Copper within 60 days of a final environmental impact statement being published, which happened in June. Plaintiffs in three different cases include the Arizona Mining Reform Coalition, San Carlos Apache Tribe, and a group of Apache women and girls. Defendants asked for the injunction to be lifted, which could lead to an immediate public land transfer. The judges did not say when their decision will be made. For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Pietrazio.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Althea Billings. The producer is Annette Newell, and our engineer is Otto. Our director of evening news is Althea Billings. Special thanks to Public News Service and Native Voice One. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Annette Newell. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News In Depth, up next.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You're listening to KBOO News In Depth. I'm Carmel Pierre-Louis. Wednesday, January 7th was the first day back in the new year for Portland City Council, and their first and ultimately only order of business was to elect a new council president. Through nine rounds of voting, the councilors were deadlocked, 6-6 between current City Council President Ilona Pirtle-Ginny and Councilor Samir Kanal. They adjourned their meeting around 4:30 Wednesday and started up again on Thursday at 2 p.m. Councilor Eric Zimmerman opened the meeting by nominating two new councilors for president position, Steve Novick and Loretta Smith. the two counselors were given their first remarks on what they would do as president when President Pirtle Guinea abruptly called for a recess. They came back about an hour later.
Thank you all for your patience. We are reconvening this afternoon's Portland City Council meeting. Folks, I apologize that we needed to recess so abruptly. We needed to pull a couple of counselors into a conversation about the city of Portland's response to an incident that occurred in the eastern part of our city. Just a day after the shooting in Minneapolis of Renee Good, there was a shooting involving two Portlanders in East Portland with federal agents. We are still waiting for more details, but needed to pull counselors to get a briefing and an update so that we could ensure that we were prepared to respond. I'm sorry to be delivering this news today. We are all holding both Ms. Good's family and the families of these Portlanders as we sit here. As far as we know, both of these individuals are still alive, and we are hoping for more positive updates through the afternoon. Colleagues, we recessed in the middle of answers from two of our colleagues to a question that was posed, I believe, by Councillor Green. Councillor Novick, I cut you off at the end of your response. Did you have anything further you wanted to add?
I did not.
Okay.
Point of order.
Councillor.
I guess I have a question. I don't know.
A point of order will get us there. Let us know what you need.
I just feel like we have to go address what just happened. But I know that the charter requires us to have this election today, and I don't want to unduly delay anything, but it feels really weird to continue this meeting and this vote when something so serious has happened.
I would look to Attorney Robert Taylor. I do believe that he has an interpretation that would allow us to end our meeting today and pick up this topic on another day if we wish to move in that direction. Mr. Taylor.
Thank you. The charter does require the council to elect a president or vice president at their first meeting. Today is a continuation of the first meeting that began yesterday. If council adjourns this meeting without electing a president, the council would not have completed the obligation required by the charter. The president and vice president seats would be vacant. However, council is provided in the code, if there is a vacancy in those offices, the presiding officer is the president who last held this position. So we could just operate under that charter or under that code provision, adjourn this meeting today, come back next week and take up this issue of the election on the 14th.
Point of information, can we not recess again?
You could recess, if we wanted to come back tomorrow, you could do that. If you just wanted to take it up at the next scheduled meeting, you would need to adjourn this meeting and come back at the next scheduled one. So you do have options there.
Nope. Robert, so that I am making sure that everybody understands what you're suggesting, we could recess this meeting to any time between now and the next scheduled meeting. We could also adjourn this meeting, and in essence, because the code calls for the previous presiding officer to fill the role of president and presumably vice presidential duties to be held by the previous vice president, or in the case of fulfilling the duty of the absence of a president, the next person in line is the former vice president, we would just continue with our current leadership structure until that meeting.
That's correct.
Okay. Councilors, I saw heads nodding at different points there and shaking at other points, and I didn't see some clear agreement. I did check with our D1 colleagues about reconvening, but if that's not...
Keep going.
Okay. I'm also hearing from Councilor Murillo, however, that she'd like us to have a bit of a break here.
I'm okay with taking the lead of the District 1 councilors. It's fine.
Okay. Thank you, Councilor.
And Counselor, I just want to acknowledge the greater impact on your family and your community from actions like this. And I'm sorry that we are trying to uphold normal orders of business. Counselor Kanal.
Thank you. I had prepared something before we took this recess, and I wanted to start by saying the name of Renee Nicole Good, who was killed by ICE yesterday in Minneapolis on Portland Avenue. I think what we're dealing with today highlights the importance of us getting organized, highlights the importance of us getting structures and processes in place that are resilient and can respond rapidly to situations as they arise. Structures that, for a variety of reasons not related to any one or more people necessarily, have not yet been created in our new form of government. And it's really vital that we have that conversation over the course of the coming weeks, because we are going to be dealing with the federal government for as long as it is the way it is. I just want to say that people in Minneapolis, I had the privilege of meeting with your council president and mayor in October, as well as your attorney general. I haven't met the governor, but I saw his ask for support, and I met with folks outside yesterday who came together in support of Portlanders and everyone around the country, because your fight is our fight for due process, for human rights, and against an unregulated federal law enforcement apparatus that considers itself judge, jury, and executioner. That's what I prepared before we learned this, and I am struck by the commonality in the stories we see around the country and now here in Portland. I think it would be appropriate, if we need to take a recess for a short period of time, but I also agree with Councillor Smith on the whole with the importance of moving to the future and building the institutions that can protect us to the degree as possible against this federal government. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor. Councillor Dunphy.
Thank you. I'm struggling to sit here right now. My initial instinct was to not let this disrupt the business and not let a tyrannical federal government prevent the city from doing the work that we need to do. But I am struggling to sit here right now and feel that I'm able to give this job or this task at hand my full attention right now. I would ask that we do move to either recess or adjourn, or if necessary, take one round of votes on this and then adjourn after that.
Councillor Smith.
Thank you. I wanted to address something. I think we do have procedures in place. The mayor has given the direction. PPB is putting out some press, and then the mayor, and so we do have those things in concert, and we are also, as a council, putting out information as it relates to this latest shooting. So we do have them. We're not without any structure at all, Councillor Kanal.
Thank you, Councillor. Councillor Avalos.
I just want to first speak to the constituents of East Portland that your East Portland councilors are attentive. We are angry, and we are going to be doing everything we can after this meeting to deal with this situation. It's hard to find words, honestly, right now. As far as this meeting goes, I think my preference would be to do a recess. My preference would be to do a recess and pick another time between now and Wednesday. I don't, you know, just given the weirdness of the charter, I don't want to play with that. I think we should find another time between now and Wednesday to resume this business. So I would prefer that. And I do agree. I was on the side of we should continue. It's complicated. I'm feeling complicated about it, but I'm hearing my colleagues and agree that we should end this meeting, but I think we need to recess it. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor. Mr. Taylor, if we were to end this meeting and recess until 9 o'clock next Wednesday, which is a half an hour before our next meeting starts, and pick back up this topic at that time, would we be legally able to essentially postpone the start of that additional meeting to complete the business of this meeting? I don't believe we've posted that meeting yet.
Yeah, you would have to, if you you could recess this meeting, take it up at 9 a.m. on Wednesday morning as a reconvening of this meeting. If you would then, if you couldn't get this issue of the election resolved in the 30 minutes, you would either continue, keep that recess meeting going throughout the day and cancel the regularly scheduled meeting. So I think there are ways procedurally to accomplish whatever council would like to do in this moment.
Okay. Colleagues, I am going to recess this meeting until 9 o'clock on Wednesday. I'm checking the date of that, January 14th. We will change some of the posting for our regularly scheduled meeting that day and adjust agendas accordingly.
That was this afternoon's Portland City Council meeting, which went into recess without selecting a council president. For KBOO News, I'm Carmel Pierre-Louis.
Welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest with Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertov. It's critical commentary on foreign affairs from a human interest perspective. The opinions expressed in the following segment are those of the speaker.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest. I'm Mel Gertov. I'll be reporting and commenting on the most important and sometimes the most neglected international news of the week. Here are today's top stories. Strong reactions to the U.S. invasion of Venezuela. Three more steps back in Trump administration environmental policy. And large protests challenge the Iranian regime. First, strong reactions to the U.S. invasion of Venezuela. Mexico, Chile, Colombia, Cuba, and Brazil are among the Latin American countries that have condemned the U.S. invasion of Venezuela. Trump and Marco Rubio have threatened three of them, Mexico, Colombia, and Cuba. It's ready to fall, said Trump of Cuba, in public statements that suggest they're next on the list. This imperial hubris is all part of what Trump has typically called the Donro Doctrine. President Luis Inácio Lula da Silva of Brazil said the U.S. attacks on Venezuela, quote, crossed an unacceptable line, set a dangerous precedent, and evoked the worst moments of interference in Latin America. Russia and China also criticized the U.S. Russia must be pleased that the U.S. has emulated it in attacking a sovereign nation, while China must be pleased that the U.S., which has often criticized China for violating international law, has acted like a predatory power. Trump has handed the Russians and the Chinese a major propaganda victory. Expect Cold War language evoking U.S. imperialism to return in critiques of Trump's foreign policy. Reactions in the U.S. to the attack on Venezuela run along predictable lines. Democrats are wringing their hands. Republicans are sitting on theirs. Democrats in Congress are once again citing Trump's failure to consult with Congress, much less gain an authorization for the use of force, such as George W. Bush obtained when he went after Saddam Hussein. In the Senate, Democrats are attempting to stop further U.S. action in Venezuela by invoking the War Powers Act, with little chance of success. One thing is certain. Trump's running of Venezuela will be a disaster for its people and for Trump's presidency. The people whom Trump has so far named to oversee the occupation, people who Trump says have expertise, the Secretary of State, Defense Secretary Hegseth, Deputy White House Chief of Staff Miller, and Vice President Vance, are ideologues. They have zero understanding of economic development and zero interest in democratic lawful governance. Only the naive believe Trump when he says Venezuelans will benefit from, quote, a tremendous amount of wealth out of the ground. He and the oil companies, Chevron most of all, will be the chief beneficiaries since, as Trump expects, they will invest billions of dollars in Venezuela, possibly subsidized by his administration, meaning U.S. taxpayers, and no longer facing U.S. sanctions. The country, in short, will be a U.S. colony. The U.S. will have to, quote, nurse the country back to health, Trump told NBC News. Restoring democracy in Venezuela will have to wait. Trump says elections cannot be held anytime soon. He has cavalierly dismissed the possibility that the 2025 Nobel Peace Prize winner, Maria Corina Machado, might serve as president, saying, despite evidence to the contrary, that she doesn't have popular support. Venezuela's vice president, Delcy Rodriguez, is now interim president. Waiting in the wings is Edmundo Gonzalez, who probably won the 2024 presidential election. Trump has said nothing about Gonzalez. As for Rodriguez, Trump said Rubio, quote, just had a conversation with her, and she's essentially willing to do what we think is necessary to make Venezuela great again. Rodriguez contradicted Trump, saying Venezuela, quote, will never return to being the colony of another empire. But lately, she's used more accommodating words. With antagonists to Trump still serving in Venezuela's government and military, and pro-Maduro gangs rampaging in city streets, how will Trump's appointees be able to control the economy and society? Unless Trump also plans to deploy U.S. soldiers in a prolonged military occupation. Three more steps back in Trump administration environmental policy. The latest Trump administration backsteps on climate change are its decision to end all contracts on wind power, the planned elimination of the National Center for Atmospheric Research in Boulder, Colorado, and the whitewashing of environmental information. The wind power decision will potentially cost billions of dollars in investments and tens of thousands of jobs. Elimination of the research center was announced by White House Office of Management and Budget Director Russ Vought. He called the facility one of the, quote, largest sources of climate alarmism in the country. But Michael Mann, director of Penn Center for Science, Sustainability, and the Media at the University of Pennsylvania, said defunding the research center, quote, very much undermines the United States' standing when it comes to the advancement of climate science. The center, he said, has played a key role in developing the science of climate modeling and the measurement of climate observations going back more than half a century. This is happening while James Hansen reports that 2025 had the second highest global temperature on record. 2027, his research group says, quote, projects a global temperature record of plus 1.7 degrees centigrade, which will provide further confirmation of the recent global warming acceleration, unquote. You won't find this news or anything else on climate change in a government publication or website. The Washington Post reported last month, quote, the Environmental Protection Agency has removed references to human-caused climate change from its website. Large protests challenge the Iranian regime. Economic and environmental problems characterized by a plummeting currency, 42% inflation, and a water crisis in Tehran have led Iran's young people as well as business owners to join huge popular protests. CNN reports, quote, this week, shopkeepers, bazaar merchants, and students took to the streets in several Iranian cities, chanting anti-regime slogans over their inability to pay rent after the currency hit record lows. The protests are the largest since a 2022 nationwide uprising. Most of Iran's provinces are in upheaval. The U.S. response is guaranteed to escalate tensions with Iran, and at a time when some in the Israeli leadership want the U.S. to attack Iran again. The U.S. State Department said in a post on X that it was concerned about reports that protesters were facing, quote, intimidation, violence, and arrests, and called on the authorities to end the crackdown. I guess that advice doesn't apply to ICE crackdowns on peaceful protests here at home. President Trump, who had declared during Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu's recent visit to Washington that he would back Netanyahu immediately if he ordered another attack on Iran's nuclear installations, followed up with the threat to intervene if Iran's security forces suppressed the demonstrations. He said the U.S., quote, will come to their rescue and is locked and loaded. Such bravado will surely lead many protesters to assume direct U.S. intervention, which could lead to a greater disaster. Israel is also encouraging the protests. One Israeli minister said, quote, Israel is with you, and we support you in every way possible. Iran responded in kind. Mohammad Bagher Ghalibaf, the head of Iran's parliament, said in a post on X that, quote, all American bases and forces across the entire region will be legitimate targets if the U.S. interferes with Iran. Ali Larijani, the head of Iran's Supreme National Security Council, said that Trump, quote, should know that U.S. interference in this internal matter would mean destabilizing the entire region and destroying America's interests. So far, the Iran leadership has refrained from a severe crackdown on the demonstrators, perhaps because business people have joined them. Still, about 1,000 people have reportedly been arrested and over 30 killed, even as the leaders promised subsidies on food prices. In other news, Greenland and Denmark leaders hit back at Trump's takeover fantasies. Prior to the Venezuela invasion, Trump appointed the governor of Louisiana, Jeff Landry, to be a special envoy to Greenland as part of his continuing effort to take over Greenland on national security grounds. Under Louisiana's state constitution, the governor should not be allowed to assume any outside position. But no matter, there he is, talking about taking over Greenland. The premier of Greenland, Jens Frederik Nielsen, was not impressed. He said, quote, "We are a people with a long history, a strong culture, and a vibrant democracy. We are a country with responsibility for our own territory and for our own future. Our territorial integrity and our right to self-determination are firmly anchored in international law and cannot simply be ignored," unquote. Denmark, which oversees the island's foreign and defense policies, has strong European backing in rejecting Trump's imperialist ambitions. Trump was unmoved, offering this childish explanation. Quote, "If you take a look at Greenland, you look up and down the coast, you have Russian and Chinese ships all over the place. We need it for national security. We have to have it." After the Venezuela operation, Trump and Stephen Miller repeated the threats. Denmark has had enough. Prime Minister Mette Frederiksen of Denmark said on Sunday that the United States had no right to annex Greenland. "I would therefore strongly urge the U.S. to stop the threats against a historically close ally," she said. Later, in a TV interview, Frederiksen added, quote, "If the U.S. decides to militarily attack another NATO country, then everything would stop. That includes NATO and therefore post-Second World War security." Prime Minister Nielsen of Greenland wrote on social media that Trump's rhetoric was, quote, "utterly unacceptable," and that connecting Venezuela with Greenland was wrong and disrespectful. A huge new U.S. arms sale to Taiwan leads to a strong Chinese response. The Trump administration has again upset Beijing with a proposed major arms sale to Taiwan valued at around $11 billion. As reported by the L.A. Times, quote, "If approved by Congress, it would be the largest ever U.S. weapons package to Taiwan, exceeding the total amount of $8.4 billion in U.S. arms sales to Taiwan during the Biden administration. The arms sales agreements cover artillery rocket systems, various missile systems, and drones, among other weapons." A Chinese foreign ministry spokesman said, quote, "This cannot save the doomed fate of Taiwan independence, but will only accelerate the push of the Taiwan Strait toward a dangerous situation of military confrontation and war. The U.S. support for Taiwan independence through arms will only end up backfiring. Using Taiwan to contain China will not succeed," he added. Beijing followed up by sanctioning 20 U.S. defense contractors, including Northrop Grumman, and 10 executives, freezing the company's assets in China and banning the executives from doing business there. Then, at year's end, all elements of the People's Liberation Army in China carried out two-day live-fire training and missile drills in the Taiwan Strait and in waters south of Taiwan. In scale, the exercises surpassed those of previous years. Taiwan defense officials said the focus of the exercises seemed to be to block any effort by external forces to come to Taiwan's aid should there be a Chinese assault. The U.S. strikes ISIS targets in Nigeria. On Christmas Day, Trump ordered a strike on ISIS fighters in northwest Nigeria, supposedly to save Christians in an overwhelmingly Muslim part of Nigeria from Islamic State terrorists, quote, who have been targeting and viciously killing primarily innocent Christians. On the ground, however, this argument was disputed, much like Trump's insistence that whites were victims of genocide in South Africa. Trump has also referred to the Nigeria situation as a genocide. Two questions are whether Christians are being targeted and whether the attackers are a unified ISIS group. In November, the New York Times had quoted two Nigerian ministers as denying that a genocide exists. Its foreign minister called on Washington to support Nigeria's democracy instead of, quote, attempting to break us up and turning us into a failed state. And Nigeria's information minister said that claims of a Christian persecution in Nigeria are, quote, false, baseless, despicable, and divisive. Christianity is neither endangered nor marginalized in Nigeria, he said. Politics best explains the U.S.-Nigeria partnership. The Nigerian government wants the U.S. to help suppress bandits, as Nigeria's president refers to the attackers. The bandits attack all people, Christians and Muslims alike. As for Trump, he is clearly pandering to white Christian nationalists. End of story. Finally, this update from Israel. During Netanyahu's visit to Mar-a-Lago, it was announced that Trump had been awarded the Israel Prize, an annual award that honors Israelis who have excelled in a variety of fields, including, quote, exceptional contribution to the nation. Trump is the second non-Israeli to receive the award. This calculated appeal to Trump's ego did not go unrewarded. Trump confirmed that he had personally asked Israel's president, Isaac Herzog, to pardon the prime minister in a bribery and corruption trial. Trump said, quote, he's a wartime prime minister who is a hero. How do you not give a pardon? I think it's a very hard thing not to do it, unquote, especially when Netanyahu claims he's the victim of a witch hunt. President Herzog denied that such a request had been made, but in any case, it's another instance of Trump's interference in another country's internal affairs. Meanwhile, in Israel, the Netanyahu government continues to make life unlivable for Palestinian people. Their forcible deportation from their homeland is an active issue. Ever hear of Somaliland? Israel has become the first country to recognize it, a breakaway region of Somalia not recognized by any other country. The United Nations Security Council held an emergency session to address Israel's recognition. What's going on? The Associated Press reported in 2025 that the U.S. and Israel reached out to officials of three East African governments, including Somaliland, to discuss using their territory to resettle Palestinians from Gaza. Somaliland's location across the Gulf of Aden from Yemen might also be a useful Israeli staging area for attacks on the Houthi. Trump said he would, quote, study Israel's action. Let's remember that Trump has total disdain for Somalia and Somalians in the United States. And that's the Global Citizen International Digest for the week. I'm Mel Gertov. Thanks for listening and take good care.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM.